It is said that depression is the most terrible illness that can afflict a human being. Until I was 52, I had experienced nothing much. The occasional cold, muscle strain, hay fever, common flu. As a teenager in a small town, there were short periods of alienation and despair. And as a young adult in Auckland, wondering what use I could be in the world. When I met my husband, Alan Brunton, I was ecstatic. I was sure we would be together forever. We would make a political, poetical theatre company to tour the world. For nearly 30 years, we worked and travelled together. We had a daughter. Life raced by, and I was amazed by its speed and the proliferation of projects. Books, theater, films, poetry. Would we ever complete everything? I was mostly happy. We made love and slept deeply at night. I leapt up every morning glad to be alive. In 2002, Alan died suddenly of a heart attack in Amsterdam. I felt shock, grief, pain, rage, and then plummeted into depression. The whole world had fallen apart. I was diagnosed as having major depressive disorder. Never had I known such anguish. Four years have passed. Every day is a battle. Joy vanishes. The world recedes. You are utterly alone, living in a personal hell. People who have never experienced this illness tell you to pull yourself together. Friends and loved ones reach out to you, but you cannot touch them. The mind is dulled by madness. Your passion dries up. This is how it is, say people you meet. Accept it. Why? You scream inside. Friends disappear. You lose them. Depression is catastrophic and selfish and disabling. One in five New Zealanders will suffer a major mental illness, and one in seven will suffer depression. Refugees, teenagers, the unemployed, the abandoned, the lonely, the bereaved. What can we do? I want to reach out and help others. I want us all to get well. May this broadcast from Hearing Voices serve as a line of communication and understanding. Let us talk to each other now.
Let us talk, indeed. Sally decided to leave this planet 10 weeks after recording what you just heard. With us today, we have Sam Broad. Hello, Sam, and thank you for coming.
G'day, Pete.
Let's talk. You have suffered from depression and survived this terrible condition. Can you tell us a bit about your journey?
Yeah, sure. I think ultimately it's something cope with as opposed to have survived. So for me, it's an illness which will change shape on me, and then I'll need to get a new set of skills to be able to cope with its changing shape, because inherently it's as your life changes, you have different thought patterns and different coping mechanisms and different strengths and weaknesses. So you can build up strengths in one area, and then before you know it, it's coming from another side. So I don't think it's... I agree with some people in that it's not something you ever get over, but I do think it's definitely something you can cope with, and it's something you can live a completely full life with, you know, and it makes you a better person, having gone through it, you know. When I first got depressed, I was probably a late teenager and a young man, and for a long time was just kind of quite normally just kind of considered, you know, what would happen at my funeral, and daily I'd kind of think, you know, well, I could chuck myself in front of this big truck which is going to the Brooklyn tip, or I could, you know, oh, but that would really upset the driver, so I better not do that, or da da da. I was kind of contemplating suicide a couple of times a day in kind of quite a normal way. And the other major thing with my depressions a lot is also this sort of constant rumination, quite sort of mad, angry rants. My mind would go off on these quite obsessive, utterly fictional events that would happen to me, and I'd always sort of, yeah, end up getting incredibly uptight about them all. So there's all this sort of busyness happening in your head without sort of any ability to really kind of cope with it all.
So you're saying it was a mind space that you slowly grew into, or that developed?
I think you're right. It's a pattern of thinking, yeah. And there's a there's a few techniques like cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT or something, which aims to sort of change it. And the sort of trite way that psychotherapists talk about, they sort of say, well, you know, you can look at the glass half full and sort of half empty and all this sort of stuff. And the last thing you need is cliches like that. What you really need is quiet. Yeah, you need, I think you need a lot of quiet and a lot of stillness. And sort of, you need crutches. So when you break your leg, you need crutches to be able to get around. In the same way, once you realize you're depressed, like for a while there's a denial, then you realize you're depressed, and that's a huge relief. That's major breakthrough. It's fantastic. Because all of a sudden, you go, oh, thank God, the world may not actually be such a fucked up place. Even though the world is actually a really fucked up place. But once you've gone through all that, you do realise, well, actually it's really fucked up, but I can kind of be who I am. You need to develop a sense of self. And you lose that sense of self because your ego is so utterly destroyed. You feel incapable of being a good friend or holding an intelligent conversation or being able to make a cup of tea for someone that tastes nice, or, you know, being able to draw a picture which looks good, or, you know, anything is, you're, and it's pointless whatever you do.
So when you became aware of the fact that you suffer from what we could call clinical depression, did you go out and seek help?
Yeah, I split up with my wife, moved back with my mum. I think I was about 22 or 23 or something. And I'd probably been suffering from it for probably 6 years. So, and I think always there'd been, part of that is just that you get quite uptight and anxious, you know, drifting around to your late 20s when you see everyone else going off there and completing degrees and getting careers and getting on with their life. And always had a sense of frustration there. Well, I'm over that now. But there's kind of no rush for anything. But it's... What was the question again?
When you realized
that
you suffered from this illness
called
clinical depression,
did
you go out and seek help immediately or...
Of course, I think there was...
Did it take a while?
No, it all happened at once. There was... It all happened over about a 2 or 3 week period where you get your notes signed by your GP and then you get within the mental health system and you kind of... All these sort of loose ends are getting tidied up and connections being severed and new ones being made and it's... an exhausting process because when you're depressed you just you don't want to get out of bed and you finally end up going to see a psychiatrist who can, you know, if you're in a big capital health system like Wellington, you know instead of your standard GP you go to a psychiatrist and they talk to you and give you the minimal dose of some sort of medication, and then they take you to, then in the same system you go to a psychotherapist. And I mean, these are people who, you're just another number in a way. They just see so many of you and are numbed, I think, by the sheer quantity of sad sacks in the world, you know. And it's just like anyone going through any sort of illness, whether it's a leukemia or an arthritis or anything. There's a journey of the self, of self-education and self-righteousness, which has to happen. And I think an important thing to realise with the medication is that they'll only ever start you off on a minimum dose. And when you're that close to suicide and everything's breaking down, a minimum dose ain't going to take the edge off. Why they do that is because they have quite serious side effects, these drugs. And so you have these sleepless nights with a really dry throat for a while. And then you also don't... They also say you'll have all the side effects first. Then you'll get some results from about 6 weeks onwards. And 6 weeks is so far in the future that it will never happen. It's unbelievable. And then after that 6 weeks, you then go back and you say, look, could you give me a little bit more, please? So then they double it. And it's still quite a minimal amount. like you're taking two pills a day instead of one. And it's just this, and while all of that's happening, what's crucial is that you're talking to people, and you're talking to people in a neutral space, because your friends and family aren't counsellors. There's a role for counselling which I think is really crucial, and that it allows you to, you don't even have to be talking about your depression in any kind of focused way, but you're just there talking, and you're realizing that the clock's ticking, and you're building up a relationship with a person. So you're telling them about all this sort of stuff, and all they need to do is ask one or two leading questions, or to answer one or two of your questions in a way that makes you look at it in a different light.
And I assume,
yeah,
while you are talking to a counselor, you learn more about yourself,
yeah,
through this interaction.
And because the nature of depression is, it's exactly like Sally said, it's a battle, and it's a battle with yourself, and it's which you can't win, and fucking lose though, and it's such a struggle. And what's really good with counselling is when you're talking about, you talk about things that once it's said, it's out there, and it's so good just to get it out. And a lot of creative people understand the process whereby you get blocked in things by not noting stuff down or not writing out a passage or whatever, and it can just block you up and block up that flow. And I think that's part of the release of depression, is releasing that dam and being able to release it in a be able to find where the blockage is and release it in a controlled way.
Now let's get back to the medication.
Yep.
You said that you feel the side effects first,
yeah,
until the medication makes a positive difference. Do the side effects remain though?
Yes.
So there is a balance there.
Yeah. You,
or hopefully there is.
That's, you know. I think that's a fact of life, as you take the good with the bad. Everything has side effects. Breathing helps us live, but the oxygen wears down all our cells and eventually we die. You know, we all rust, effectively. And so, it's tricky. I mean, the pharmaceutical guys are a bunch of fuckwits, but it does work. And the first ones I tried were tricyclics, and they were quite old-fashioned, and I don't think many of them are really prescribed these days, or they shouldn't be. And almost everyone has a dry throat. It feels like your tongue's a big, fat, dead thing in your mouth. Bloody unbelievable. All the time, no matter how much water you drink. And you have quite a light, restless sleep here. And you know, when you're depressed, you feel... For me, I felt tissue thin. I felt so easily terrible in one way or another. And the other thing I wanted to do was just go to sleep for 6 months. And the medication won't let you do that. What would be great would be if someone just injects you, puts you on a life support machine for 6 months, and you can wake up. I'm sure they should do experiments. I'm sure it'll work.
So, okay, well, let's talk to the psychiatrist about it. So you did not use any sleeping pills to offset...
Yeah, they prescribe you those and things. And, I mean, it's a bit of a dag, because it's kind of, you know, all you have to do is overdose on them. And all your answers are done. No more worrying about anything. It's, yeah, it's funny. I mean, yeah, they attempt to affect or change or eliminate certain symptoms of your illness, but you will also gain other symptoms, which I'll then also try to attempt to eliminate and stuff. You can get onto a sort of a cascade of medication. And I think especially a lot of people in the mental health system who have, you know, bipolar, have these manic episodes as well as these deep depressions. They can often be misdiagnosed as schizophrenics because of this mania that they have. And the cocktail of medications you can get on there is just insane. So I think you have to, I mean, there's, yeah, you have to be quite careful about it all, because at the end of the day with depression, what really helps is being able to produce your own serotonin and endorphins, and these are natural things in your body. And you do that by laughing and having exercise and having sex. And the last thing you need is medication, and it makes you impotent, doesn't give you a good night's sleep. Therefore, you always feel exhausted, and, you know. So it's kind of, it's a crooked, nasty little cycle.
Okay, you've been talking about exercise.
Yeah.
Sex, which is a sort of exercise as well. Not only for the body, but also for the spirit and the mind.
Yeah.
Did you get to start doing yoga, for example?
A long time. I suffered from occupational overuse syndrome in my arms for about a year and a half before I realised I was depressed. And what that was a symptom of my body telling me I was unhappy. It was a symptom of my emotional instability. And I still suffer from OOS, because now I've just got this sort of body pattern of feeling pain in my arms. But what kicked ass there was doing... There were two things. One was Tai Chi Chuan, which was... or Chen-style Tai Chi Chuan, which was a really quite a vigorous, strong version of Tai Chi. And the other was Astanga Yoga. But everyone's bodies are different. But this one was a really high heart rate sort of a yoga, in that you were doing a sun salute between every half stretch, you know, from one side to the other, and quite a big class. So it was that getting your heart rate up and doing lots of breaths and building up a lot of strength and flexibility. So you're just getting totally into your body. And that sort of full body immersion helps release this kind of full emotional immersion, or this full mental or full spiritual immersion as well, all these other aspects of your life. Exercise is just brilliant. And there's nothing like, you know, tramping and walking too, just being able to get out somewhere sort of quiet with a sense of being by yourself, with your lungs full of fresh air, really.
Now, Sam, I know that you are a creative person.
Yeah.
Would you say that creative work, well, once you are able to do it again, helps in the process of living a normal life?
Or you can live a fantastic life through creativity, a life better than anyone else's, really. You need to be a complete person before you die. You need to be involved in creative projects and in projects that involve you and others, and in things that show yourself to other people. And sure, doing art's crucial for me. I think a big part of my depression was that, you know, I failed at Teachers College and failed at university and failed at Polytech and God knows how many other fucking tertiary things I tried. And all these kind of clumsy, sort of stumbling kind of adulthood kind of things that I was learning, and really what I should have been doing was just drawing every day, and that's what I do now. And I was kind of lucky because I was sort of halfway decent talented in that area, but and working as a tutor at Vincent's Art Workshop, you see what creativity does to people. It cures them. Yeah. We don't have a society that promotes it in a way in that you can live as an adult member in society, to live and interact in the Western world, that allows you to pay your rent and your bills and eat food and afford a movie and afford a night out and things like that. The arts won't do that, and that's what's so kind of criminal about our system. And that's, I think, one of the major aspects where I think depression's part of a society complex, and that it, you know, so many people accept the, you know, artists are poor and struggling kind of thing, and part of it's true, but it's so fucking bullshit, it doesn't have to be. And it's a sick society that accepts it.
Now, what we haven't talked about is how depression affects the people around you, like friends and family. Can you talk about this interaction and maybe give people that have a depressed friend or family member what people should do or can do?
That's a tricky one. 'Cause I think some of it's to do with how you are as a person, as to whether you can, how it is you relate to your, to other members of your family, and what your personality's like and things, let alone your friends. I was lucky, I had really good friends who just stuck around, and they weren't, I think they were kind of quite confused and didn't really quite know what to do about it all, but were quite patient. And
did you ever hear this phrase, pull yourself together, Sam?
Yeah, vicariously from a friend about a flatmate of his who was going through depression. And I think he said, you know, why doesn't he just snap out of it? And I remember looking at him going, should I rein him in on that? Or maybe, you know, this is just one of those flatmate dynamics as well. But it's, I think it is hard and frustrating when, you know, when you can see how talented and onto it people are, and yet you just can't shake the sense into them, you know. Yeah, I think it's a lonely journey. I honestly don't believe there's much friends and family can do. There's a whole lot they can't. There's a whole lot they actually can't do, and there's a whole lot they shouldn't do.
What is it they shouldn't do?
Well, they shouldn't say things like "pull yourself together," but every now and then, it's good to hear it at different stages, because we do have the strength in us to take responsibility for ourselves. We need to be responsible, and we need to own the illness and be righteous, and it's a really hard effort. You can't rely on the counselling, you can't rely on the medication, all that sort of stuff. You need to somehow pull yourself together, right? And that the trick's trying to find that, and you only kind of see it in retrospect. You only kind of see these little stages and plateaus you get to. And what really helps with friends and family are the friends and family who've experienced similar stuff. Like, I've got a friend who can really articulate these experiences really well, and talking to him was really magic, because he would say the sort of things like it was just before a big solo show of mine, and I was kind of nervous like you always are, and, you know, I had this silly moustache, and I was single, and the world was full of attractive women who didn't like me, and, you know, all of this sort of stuff, and I was ranting at him, and he was just going, look at you, you know, you're a righteous motherfucker, you've got this incredible show, you've got a kick-ass looking moustache, we've walked down the street, I've seen 15 women check you out, you know, just get your shit together, you know, you're righteous, just say you're a righteous motherfucker. It's like, oh yeah, you're right, I'm a righteous motherfucker. And it was just a nice little rant to be given, a nice little shake and stuff, and it was a really, and only a friend can do that, you know, with a friend with good timing and good credentials. And then family, what the great thing about family, which is so crucial, is, you know, they'll always be there. So there's that wonderful ability to, in a way, take them for granted, and that you can behave poorly. You know, you can have a social situation where you're fed and looked after, and you can just be a sad sack in the corner, and you don't have to be up. And that's the other good thing, that you can be around family, is you can't necessarily do that around friends or whatever. So family can create that sense of belonging without having to invest any energy. And because there's a tiniest amount of energy invested is so exhausting. That's where family can really help a lot. And then they can kind of give you a nudge and a kick and say, you know, hey, why don't you just start, you know, doing the dishes a bit more often around here or whatever. And it's like, yeah, fair enough, you know. Yeah, but they can give you that time and space to be still.
That you obviously need. So, going back to something you said before, is it a fair assumption to say that suffering from depression, you may have to accept the fact that this is part of what you are?
Yeah.
And what you can do is live with it, but you may never get rid of it.
Yeah, and it's... And I don't mean you always feel wretched all the time.
Sure.
By saying that, I mean that that I've had a couple of frights since I thought I had cured it that has made me realise that it will lurk there. And as you experience it longer with your coping mechanisms, you understand the difference between feeling hungover or having a down day and actually starting another episode of depression. And, you know, and these are brilliant things to realise. The level of self-realisation here is so much more than other people get, and that allows you to self-actualise and, you know, and all this, you know, so there's these amazing strengths that come with all of this. And so that then you can kind of just go, well, okay, stop. What do I need? I need to call my counsellor and start getting a few sessions like that. I haven't done any exercise for 6 months. I might go and do that. I'll just give mum and dad a quick call and just say, ooh, I think I'm on the edge. And they'll just check in on me every couple of days with a nice phone call. And that's really easy. You know, and then you can go, right, well, I won't go out and get so bloody hammered as much because I know that feeling hungover and stoned over and stuff ain't going to help. So, you know, you get all these sort of, and you can, all of a sudden, you know, you've actually kind of kept that episode at bay again, and it's a month later and you're back into your old habits, but you've kind of just got skirted around that one, and then you've kind of got the straight highway ahead, and then there might be another corner a little bit later on. And so these are all things that you get through experience. I think I hate it. I hate the amount of cliches and things that come out. But I think a huge amount of people who get depressed are intelligent and creative, and they get depressed because intelligent people, truly intelligent people, have heart, and they see how fucked up the world is. And creative people understand the solutions, but, you know, get so frustrated with this homogenized stubbornness of society. And if you're that type, then just watch out. You might be an addict, or you might be depressed, or you might be self-abusive or something. You may be within a sort of ballpark of depression because of the way your brain is wired.
And of course your brain also influences your body chemistry.
Yeah.
Whether you want it or not. And this is, scientists are still out there, you know. What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Is it a chemical imbalance within your body that causes depression? Or is it your mind that changes the chemical balance? with all the symptoms that go with it. And putting you in some sort of feedback loop, this self-enforcing feedback loop that drags you further and further into this dark space we call depression.
It is that feedback loop's dangerous. That's where the yoga and the tai chi help, any of those. I did Buddhist loving kindness meditation as well. And that was just amazing. Did a silent retreat for 5 days where we just didn't talk. We just breathed down into our hearts. And the guy was just saying, look, we've all got hearts as larger than all the suns in the universe. And I was just like, well, that's good to know. There's a lot out there you can do. That's where friends and family help as well, by picking up the phone, organising that for you. Because it can be just so hard doing it yourself. So they can give you that little kick along. They can buy you the bus ticket to get up to Otaki to go to the retreat or whatever. And that's that's invaluable.
Shall we wrap it up?
Shall we wrap it up?
Or yep. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
I mean, just that, you know, the people who are sensitive and who are intelligent and who are creative, they're the good people, and they shouldn't have to suffer from this. And it's just important that they stay around, because every single person out there who's successfully committed suicide has been missed so much. And the planet's full of fucking dickheads and we can't let them win.
Well, I think we should end on this note.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Well, thank you so very much for being here, Sam, and talking to us. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thank you.